This week's Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by Electrify America, and we're so happy to be partnering with Electrify America until the end of the year. With Electrify America, you can drive your EV from coast to coast with more than 650 charging stations nationwide and new locations opening every week. Electrify America is bringing EV drivers the freedom they need. Whether you want to plan a weekend getaway, maybe you're off to see some friends or relatives, maybe it's a coast-to-coast road trip. You can ask our Kyle about how that's done using Electrify America charging stations. Well, you can rely on Electrify America's ultra-fast chargers to get you back on the road faster. So, where will you go charging on Electrify America? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear what your plans are for this weekend, and tell us where you'll go next. And you can learn more at electrifyamerica.com.
Okay. And one moment.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for December the 3rd, 2021. This is episode number 87. Our topics today, Nissan shows off its Leaf replacement, Polestar 3 appears covered in camo, and the Lexus teases the RZ crossover. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is big in Beijing, Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. Martin came down with something at the last moment and is sick, so he don't think he'll be with us today unless he has a miraculous recovery. But Kyle Connors should be joining us from the majestic halls of Autospec Studios. He also puts together stunning, nay, stupefying videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. Okay, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the show. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications over there. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome, everybody. Tom, how you doing?
How's it going, Dom? Just you and me right now. But hopefully Kyle's going to join us soon. He's searching for a good internet connection. You know, Kyle, he's always in unusual remote places, you know, doing some crazy thing, recording some really cool video. So he's searching for a good internet connection. But we think he'll be joining us at some point.
Right. He is in Pasadena, I believe, and I hope to be joining him like right after we finish the recording the show. I'm going to jump on, run to the airport, and go to Pasadena and drive some awesome electric cars. So Kyle's put together this weekend. He's contacted all these different YouTubers from all over the country and electric car enthusiasts, and then he's also contacted a bunch of electric vehicle or companies, automakers with vehicles. And we're going to drive some of those and maybe just like look at some and climb around them. And we'll tell you about that for sure next week, what we see. But first,
yeah, sounds like a lot of fun, Dom. Too bad I can't make it. I'm a little out of driving range right now.
Oh, really? Where are you at?
I'm in Dubai.
Okay.
So yeah, spending a little time, the other side of the world, unfortunately I had this planned before Kyle organized that, because I would have definitely been there. It's going to be a fun event. It's got a bunch of different EVs, a whole bunch of different, electric vehicle influencers and journalists and so forth. Everyone's just kind of get together to have a little bit of an EV party, shoot some videos, interview each other, drive some cars. So it should be a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of cool content coming out of this for everybody to watch on a variety of different, channels. So look out for that.
Right. Oh, Kyle's joining us here.
You got to select a little different square there.
Different square. Oh, yes. Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Like this?
Like that. Are we live?
We are.
We're live, everyone.
Good morning. So we were just talking about your weekend this weekend in Pasadena, California, and I guess that's where you are?
Yeah. So we're here just at the host hotel at the Sheraton, and cars are being dropped off all day yesterday and today. And people are showing up. All of the overseas folks arrived last night. So got to see them, which was great. A whole bunch of Germans and UK people. Okay. And it was great.
I guess Martin isn't there.
Martin did not make it, but Martin's friend is here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Martin's sick actually this morning. I don't know if you saw that in the chat.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, the light on you helps if it's when it's on. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's still before the sun comes up fully here in California.
Oh, nice. So we're like all over the place again this week.
Where's Tom?
Tom is in Dubai.
Oh, you're already there.
Oh, yeah. Been here for a couple of days. Pretty cool.
So which version of the Lamborghini Aventador did you rent?
So the funny thing is, obviously, I didn't rent any of those. You know you're in Dubai when a Lamborghini Urus pulls up and it's a taxi.
No way.
Yellow checkered taxi.
That's amazing.
It's crazy. A lot of Model 3s here. Those black Model 3s that are taxis. They're all over the place. Lexus and a lot of Toyota Camry hybrids are like the taxis everywhere. But a lot of black base Model 3s. I've seen dozens of them.
I'm trying to pull up that picture that you shared with me.
Yeah, I also saw another really cool car, which I think Dom's trying to pull up right now. So if we just so happened to be here the week that it's like this giant celebration.
50 years, right?
In Dubai. Yeah, 50 years, like 1971 when Great Britain left Dubai and they, you know, became independent. So this is their big 50th year anniversary. And they're also hosting this thing called Expo 2020 for a few months. It's like a world's fair. And it's enormous. And they have areas for every country of the world set up where you can go walk around. I mean, you need days to see this whole area. So we went there and checked that out. And I went in the Croatia area, and their main attraction is the Navara. It's like this is Croatia. So
honestly, that's like one of the best things. If they can't bring the scenery, may as well bring that car.
Exactly. So it was really cool. But it was funny how there's someone there telling everybody about the car, and it was cool. They were so proud of how it's developed in their country, and they talk a little bit about Matt and how the country, how the company formed and everything. Yeah, that's me. It was really cool. But I sat there and listened to them explain to me what electric cars are and why it's important. It was cool. And then I had to ask them to clear the field so I could take a couple of pictures, and that wasn't easy because everyone was standing around it. But they were kind enough when I explained to them, look, I'm a journalist and I'd really like to get a couple clean shots of this. They actually pushed everybody to the side and let me take a couple pictures and even record a really short video. So it was pretty cool.
So what was your impression of this car in person?
You know, it looks gorgeous. You know, I got lots of shots of all the different angles and everything, and really just stunning. Absolutely gorgeous.
So when I saw the concept one in, I think 2015, and I was really struck at how low it was to the ground, like the roof. It was only 3 feet off the ground or something. I don't know. Is that similar?
Yeah. Well, you can see, first of all, it's up on a platform here. Right. It's about maybe 14 inches off the ground. So I didn't get that real feeling because it was already lifted. Right. But yeah, you could tell it's low. I mean, the gorgeous lines. I mean, it's amazing, job that Rematz did, besides the whole performance and everything, it's also stunningly beautiful, so they really did a super job there. It was really cool. Sweet. And the only other thing, so then there was this other press announcement by ABB that they were going to do the world display of the Terra 360. Kyle, you probably heard about that. That's going to be the first time they show it in public and everything. So I had a navigate to the to that area, and it was took 45 minutes to find and I got there, and I didn't read the little footnote that it was going to be on display December 13th. So it's after an hour of navigating through Expo 2020 to get to the right area, it was no, that's not here, that's not coming for a couple of weeks. But it was fun. It's really something else out here.
Hey, so this week you did drive the Porsche Taycan GTS, I believe.
Yes, I had the media drive of the GTS, And also the Sport Turismo, but we're not allowed to talk about our driving impressions yet of the Sport Turismo. Just the GTS sedan, Porsche rented out Willow Springs. We're able to run about 10 laps, and that was the extent of the drive. We couldn't take it on the road, but I mean, it was kind of appropriate because this is their like track Taycan. Like this is what they, you know, are. Yeah, and that's actually footage that they're recording with the drone right after we finished the drive. So it was pretty cool. You know, I mean, it's what I like about what Porsche is doing with the Taycan is, you know, they're giving you every flavor that you can imagine, which is what Porsche does. And, you know, when they first made the car, I was concerned that maybe they wouldn't do that with the Taycan. Maybe they would treat it differently. You know, they wouldn't give us all these different versions, but no, they're full in on it and saying, look, you know, it's just another Porsche. It just, you know, just happens to plug in instead of, you know, refueling with liquid fuel. So yeah, the GTS is the Gran Turismo Sport version, and it's kind of like in the whole lineup of Porsches, it's like the real enthusiast version, where it's not the highest end. So it's, you know, you can get it for less than a top spec Porsche, but it's supposed to be the best one, like made for the track. And you know, Kyle could probably talk a little bit about that even more. But that's what this version. If you really like, you know, taking your Porsche out on the track once a month or every now and then, if that's really your priority is tracking the car, then this is probably the version you want to get.
Right. So I guess is it lighter, Kyle, or something?
I can't speak to it because I wasn't there. So it's all Tom.
Okay.
It is slightly lighter. Not a whole lot. It is slightly lighter.
Is it lower? Because it looks like really, you know,
it has the same lower. I don't have
adjustable
the
suspension. It's the same suspension as the normal sedan, which has varying degrees of height, including scraping concrete. But it does have certain suspension situation standard, like Porsche torque vectoring is, you know, rear axle torque vectoring. It has rear steering as optional. It has Porsche dynamic chassis control as a separate system than the other cars that's tuned to be even sportier. So while a Turbo S is still going to be faster than this around a track, this is significantly less expensive and not as special as a Turbo S. It's just going to be the sweet spot, I think, when you factor price, performance, and what this car is intended for with that big power on the rear axle. Again, I haven't driven it, so I can't say how drifty it was or anything like that, but it seems like it's set up to be the perfect car for me, more or less.
Right.
And it's the only Taycan I've ever had on the track. So I can't compare it to other Taycans on the track. You know, it's hard for me to say, oh yeah, it definitely, you know, felt better set up for the track. It should be. And they did have, as Kyle said, you know, it's not quite as fast as a Turbo S. There was a lead car. Porsche had a driver that we would follow, you know, professional driver, and he was driving in a Turbo S. So, you know, we could never quite catch up to him, even if we were as good a driver as he was, which of course none of us were. But you know, it was really a tremendous driving experience. I had some person say, "How did it handle the 10 laps?" We did 5 and 5, and I'm not sure if I don't think that was to let things cool down as much as it was to get out after we did 5 laps, talk to the engineers, talk to the person, the driver that was leading us. Because he, you know, and then analyze our track and, you know, what we had done and maybe make tweaks to do better in the second 5. So, but there was no like thermal throttling or anything like that, if that's what you're referring to.
Right. I think that's probably what he was referring to. So how fast, like, did you go? Did you feel like you were like at 10 tenths or I don't know?
Well, I didn't go quite as fast as I did on the regular Taycan on the Autobahn, you know, on the track. I mean,
I had them
up to the 168, 167, 168. You know, you can't really get it up that high on the track. I think the most I got it up to was like 125 or somewhere around there.
But in the turns, how loud were those tires squealing?
Yeah, they were squealing. And we actually had to swap tires right before I got into the car because the driver before me just chewed them up. So they were swapping tires between drivers, even just like 10 laps, they were putting fresh tires on the car for us.
Wow, that's crazy. All right.
I don't know. I've never gotten 10 laps out of a set of tires before, so don't know what that would be like. I'm just joking.
Right on. Okay. So, well, let's see if we did that right. Yes. Okay. So I was in Montreal this week, as you probably know, if you watched last week's show, on vacation, and I didn't really drive anything, but I did all kinds of like car spotting, and it was kind of fun. So we have, so Montreal had like a ton of electric cars. Like I couldn't believe all the cars that were there. I understand that there's, they have like half of the electric cars in Canada are sold in Quebec, apparently, because they have generous incentives. So I saw like a Smart EV, IMEV, which I've never, I think I've seen one before in like in Tallahassee, Audi e-tron, Nissan Leafs, Hyundai Kona Electric. I've never seen one here. There was a Mini E charging in the parking garage of my friend's place. Let's see if I have a couple pictures here I can share with you, I'm hoping. Here we go. And then bring to screen. There we go. Yeah. Right. So Mini E on Steely's.
That's a good look.
Yeah. You like that? It got the back of it. Yeah, I was surprised.
Just wait till you come out to California. Don't attempt to do any kind of EV spotting because you'll run out of space on your phone.
Right. No, I didn't take half like pictures. There was like a lot of Model 3s there. Like even on the bus coming from the airport, there was like, I think I spotted like three or four and it was like dark. And it was like, wait a second, that's right. They're all over the place.
There's Model 3s everywhere now. They're just littered the country.
Right.
And it's so pretty cool. That e-tron looks great.
Yeah. So if you notice, they have these like poles like for street side parking. I think they were only like level two though, like 72.
Yeah, those aren't DC fast chargers, but that's all you need for street parking.
Right. No, and it was great. But the wires like hang from way up above, so you know they're not hanging on the ground because it snows there, and those sidewalks get plowed by little tiny snow plows that come along. And so yeah.
Someone wants to know if you got poutine.
I did. Oh, man, I don't have the picture of it queued up to show you.
That's what we really want to see. We've seen all these cars. We want to hear about the poutine.
You want to see a plate of poutine?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good bowl. So it was like, yeah, it was like, so I can't get a good poutine down here in the South.
So you made it out of the country? Because Dominic called me the other day, or I called him, but we were texting, and he's like, I don't know if I'm going to get out of here because of all of the regulations and stuff, but that you ended up going in and you got everything sorted?
Yeah. It was, because I needed to take a COVID test to leave the country, and I didn't realize that because I'm an idiot. And so, yeah, it was like the night before, and I realized, oh, I have to take a COVID test. But I didn't realize I could take one at the airport and just like get, I just had to get there early. I just had to wake up at 10 to 4 in the morning.
Yep.
And that was fun. I've
been there a few times for sure for those rapid tests at the airport.
Let's see if that worked. And there you go.
Yeah, now we're talking.
There is a plate of poutine.
That's the content we need.
Right. Yeah. It was so good. Yeah, I had souvlaki, and I went to get some bagels. I'd show you all my vacation pictures, but I'm sure people here want to talk about cars. So I guess let's do that.
It's a free show. We can talk about whatever we want.
That's true.
Yeah.
So Tom, let's just finish up. So last week we had this controversy about the Lucid Air DC fast charging situation. Someone made a video claiming that the Lucid Air battery was huge because they didn't understand how DC fast charging works. But they called you like a liar, and then they had people, you know, chasing you down, send you emails, and like, harassing you like you're a scammer, you know, all these things.
For a shill for Lucid that I was protecting their lies because, you know, they can't possibly have a 118 kilowatt hour battery pack. First of all, you know, I've never made a definitive statement that said they do. As I said, based on the charging, it appears as though that's about the size of the pack. But you know, when we were done with the charging session, the full 0 to 100, the Electrify America charging station showed 134 kilowatt hours. So that's what was used as proof that Lucid's lying in their battery packs over 100 and 30 kilowatt hour, because as everyone knows, there's no charging losses with DC fast charging. There's only charging losses with AC charging. That's what the claim was. So that, you know, I gave a full representation of how big the battery pack was. So, you know, the thing is, we don't want to necessarily respond to trolls and people that make these claims that are, you know, easily, you know, proven wrong. The problem is when some of these people have followings, and the followers then believe this information. So I think more of anything to try to explain to the other people that maybe, you know, put their faith in certain people and they get misinformation. We said we need to kind of explain what charging losses are with yeah. electric vehicles. So I wrote an article, tried to detail it the best that I could. And then we had another gentleman, an engineer, was it Keith Ritter, I think his name is.
Yes.
He followed up. He wrote an article and sent it to us and said, look, you know, I'd like to kind of give further proof of what Tom is saying is correct. And I'd like to write an article for you. I know a lot about this stuff. So we said, sure, of course, you know, if it's interesting content, you're an expert in this field. Sure. So we did that. And, you know, we kind of, I think, just beat this thing down into the ground now and said, look, you know, we kind of proved that, you know, electric vehicles have charging losses with DC fast charging. Now, every vehicle has different losses. Even every charging station has different losses. Even every charging session has different losses, depending on how hot it is and so forth and so on. So, you know, it's not a finite number. We could say if you charge your Porsche Taycan, there's going to be 10 kilowatt hours of lost energy for heat and so forth and so on. But we pretty much beat that one down. And it's unfortunate we had to do it. But like Dominic said, we had tons. I personally had probably more than 200 comments on my YouTube channel and emails and messages of people saying you're a liar, this is bullshit, pardon my French, you know, you're a shill for Lucid, you know, how much are they paying you, you know, watch, Tom's going to get a free air in a couple months. I wish that was the case. But you know, it is what it is, and we tried to set the record straight.
Right on. So if you're looking at the screen here, this is like a Taycan session, I believe. 99%.
Yeah. So I also did the Porsche Taycan with the Performance Plus battery right before Lucid, but the video came up after because I wanted to prioritize the Lucid video. I actually in a span of like two or three weeks, I did the Tesla Model S Plaid, Porsche Taycan, and then the Lucid Air. 0-100 DC fast charging, three of the fastest charging electric vehicles available today. We don't have the Ioniq 5 here yet, so I couldn't do that. This was the Taycan charging session. And as you could see up in the upper right-hand corner of the screen, it says there's 94 kilowatt hour. Now,
right.
Unfortunately, that was used against me again because the Taycan has a 94 kilowatt hour battery pack.
That's the
total capacity. So. Right. Some people said, see, you're lying, but you know, you have to really then explain, but the usable capacity is about 83.7. So that's all we could ever stuff into that pack, about 83 and change, even if I drove it down till it couldn't drive anymore. And I didn't, you know, I drove it well below zero, but there was probably a kilowatt hour or maybe half a kilowatt hour in there when I was done. So, you know, that's all we got in there, about 83 kilowatt hour, and the rest, that 11 kilowatt hour is charging losses. So it had to happen. It had to end up being the exact kilowatt hour of the total pack, you know, that kind of complicated things.
So that's like a 12%.
Yeah, it was about 11 change percent charging loss. And when I did the Lucid Air, it was 13% charging losses, which is kind of high compared to what we usually see. It's a little higher than what we usually see.
Right.
But it's such a big pack, and we charged it for such a long time, and it charges at such a high rate that, you know, that the even though it has the 900-volt architecture, which should reduce losses a little bit, it was still charging at over 300 kilowatt and over 200 kilowatt for a long time. And you know, that there's going to be losses in there.
Yeah, well, right. I think the real question is, because as a percentage, I don't see how the Lucid would be higher depending on pack size. The real question is not battery pack capacity, because this is not an accurate way to test capacity. You could never test it with charging. You always have to test it with discharging. And so to me, I don't know why people are so up in arms about capacity for the wrong test to even look at it. You know, that Tom, you and I spoke about this too. The point of this test is to look at the charging curve, not to see how much energy you can get into the test. So the whole thing was just silly, in my opinion. However, I do think there is something we should dig into, which you mentioned before, which is this 13% charging losses,
right?
Which is at what, you know, because those are billed charging losses. Are they billing you for the Electrify America AC to DC grid storage losses? Are they billing you for the handle losses? My guess is everything post and down. So any on the physical touchscreen touching that goes through the handle is what you're being billed for. But it's possible they're billing you for ancillary components of DC fast charging. But also this 13% is really intriguing to me because it's not like it charged that fast for so long. I mean, I think we should average it out. I bet Tikon charges at a higher average rate to 50% or for whatever amount of kilowatt hours or amount of time. You can't do pack percentage because they're different packs. But it just seems like it's you know, it's one test out of many, and every session's different in different climates. It could have been a hotter day where you were and it had to run extra cooling than when you did your Tikon. I mean, we don't, it's not apples to apples, but I think we could do an apples to apples test with more instrumented equipment and do a charging efficiency test, which in theory I would think Lucid would be best at because they have the highest pack voltage. So we'll see, I guess, if we want to dig into that, it's something we could do in the future.
Yeah, and you're 100% right. And we would never have talked about pack capacity based on this test. We would never have said that, but we got called out and we were basically said that we were lying and we had to respond to it. And that's how we tried to reverse. Yep.
No, all the arguments
down
that
from 134 down to around 118. And, you know, 118 is what Lucid says. I'm pretty comfortable it being somewhere between 118 and 120. But as Kyle said earlier, the only way to do that is with the discharge, which I'm going to be doing in, I think, 14 or 15 days. I don't have the exact date set up. It's going to be the week of the 15th. I've confirmed it with Lucid. When I'm done with my vacation, I'm going to come back. We're going to get the date squared out, and I'm going to fly back out. They're giving me a car to let me pick my route, and I'm going to do the 70-mile-an-hour highway range test where I want to. I'm also going to try to do a couple more charging tests, maybe the as Kyle and I talked about last week, plug in at the point where we saw the charge rate drop down below 300 kilowatts, see if it grabs that again, and how long it does and what it looks like from that point on. And then maybe even if I have enough time, discharge the car again and plug in and do 20 to 80, because a lot of people are interested in 20 to 80 and do that. So it depends on how long I have the car for, but the priority is the range test. That's going to get done. How much time I have left over for charging, I'm not sure just yet, but we'll be able to add the Lucid Air to the Inside EV's 70-mile-an-hour highway range test in a couple of weeks.
Sweet. Awesome. So that's something to look forward to, and we'll talk about that here as well, I guess, on the podcast. So, Kyle, have you been driving anything new this week?
Everything. Also, yesterday was the best day ever because we took two rally prepped Volkswagen ID4s. One was the Tanner Faust car. If you go to my Twitter, you'll see the photos. Video just went live this morning about an hour ago on Out of Spec Reviews, and we took the Rebel rally car and the Nora 1000 rally car, and Jordan and I shredded them around the desert in the dirt. We were jumping them, we were ripping them around this field, full drifts in the rear wheel drive towards the end of the video. It was an epic day. We came back to the hotel here covered in mud and dust, and then it was so funny actually coming back to the hotel, because when we arrived yesterday morning, there was this Nissan Leaf parked in front of the hotel.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, that's so cool, someone has an orange Leaf here, like that is super clean too. Wonder who that could be. And Nissan didn't say, hey, we delivered the Leaf. It was just there. And so then we come back at night and we're like, the Leaf is still here. This is something's up here. I don't know. I thought the Leaf wasn't getting here till Friday, till today. But then we went inside. We're like, do you know whose Nissan this is? And they're like, oh, we forgot all about that. We meant to call you. We have the keys here. So we left. We blocked the entire hotel valet entrance right here all day.
Oh, awesome. Way to go, Kyle.
Yeah, we had no idea. Anyway, Yeah, this is
wait a minute. Didn't you block another driveway out in LA with your van?
Oh yes, that was at the Sheraton. Wait, was that what hotel were we at? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Intercontinental
downtown. Yeah, we had to air down the tire.
You, Kyle.
Look, LA and me and logistics, maybe not the best situation, but thankfully my colleague Lexi is coming in now. I'm about to go pick her up at the airport after this, and she is handling the event, so I don't have to. Obviously, I'm not capable. But yeah, this ID4 rally day was stellar. Really cool event. Yeah, watch this. You know, that's me driving right there and fully shredding around the ID4. Had an absolute blast. And yeah, we filmed all of this. Volkswagen, you know, we literally just did this a few hours ago, and Volkswagen's like, oh, we'll get the footage to you in a couple of days. I'm like, no. This is going live in the morning.
Right.
So yeah, it was really good fun.
Doesn't mess around with that time, man. It's fast. Everything's fast.
Everything's like real time.
Yeah. It looks great.
Yeah, it was such an amazing event. And the cars were really good. I fooled the ESP system in the rear-wheel drive car. I don't know how to get it to freak out and turn off so then we could have some actual fun. It was a little bit set up to be safe, I think more for lifestyle media perhaps, where you could like drive it on dirt and whatever. But like we just sent it until they kicked us out, basically. And they didn't kick us out, but they came close a couple times, I'm sure.
So you're going over the little parts of, you know, it's all, is it like reinforced and hardened? How stock is this?
The all-wheel drive car is pretty much bone stock, just with the interior taken out. The rear-wheel drive has bespoke suspension and, you know, take a look at the interior here. Yeah, this is the one that's just fully kitted out. You can see the car has no power to it, so you have to pull the handle all the way up to open the mechanical latch. Fully caged, racing seats. It's got battery disconnects in there for high voltage systems. Surprisingly, I fit in the racing seats, and they were designed for Tanner Faust, which was really a shock because I'm not the smallest person, but I squeezed myself in there. Getting out was funny though. And yeah, you can see all the warning lights on there. The cars have no range because they're just being driven at full throttle all day long, and so chewing through the battery and yeah, it's just an amazing experience. Really was. I thought Volkswagen did a great job once they figured out like, okay, you don't want to just drive around in a dirt parking lot. No, we want to like shred these things. So like everyone look the other way. Let us get a good video here. So we did.
Right. And if you want to watch that whole video, it's on your AutoSpec Reviews channel.
That's right. It just went up. Yep.
Because you have several channels, right?
10 now.
10 channels.
Yes. Ooh,
this is cool. Yeah, I'm going to try to watch it on the plane, I guess, because I won't have time other than that, but.
Well, that's good news fun. Is it's not going anywhere, I hope. So you can watch it at any point in the future.
That's true. All right. So
let me grab a quick question. Jumping back to what we were talking about before, Alex asks, why does Porsche advertise 94 kilowatt hour battery if it'll never be 94? Well, Alex, different OEMs have different policy in what they talk about their battery. Some of them give you the total capacity and the usable capacity. Some don't. So every manufacturer gives you a different information. So it can be confusing sometimes. And why did they advertise that? Well, because that's the size of the battery pack in the car. You can't access all of it. There's a buffer there that's made to really have the car have a long life. But, you know, they should, you know, they're clear and they say it's a 94.3 kilowatt battery pack, but 83.7 is usable. So that's why. And I think all manufacturers should give you the net and the total, because I mean, you're buying their car, so you should have that information. I think some OEMs think it's just confusing people, so they just throw out a number. It's this size battery pack. And then we have to dig in and say, well, are you giving us the usable capacity or the total capacity?
Right.
And you know, there's no consistent method of reporting this right now,
right.
The usable and the total. So I think that's going to sort itself out over the next few years. I think we'll get to a point where everybody announces the same thing, but we're not there right now. So it is confusing to a lot of people.
Right. And it doesn't really mean a whole, I mean, we can see that some people have a bigger buffer than others, but as chemistry changes and we get the solid state, maybe that'll have a tiny buffer. And those relationships that we learn between, you know, full pack and nominal pack. Those relationships could all shift and change. So, you know, it's
already shifting and changing. When I did the BMW i4 and iX drive, I was talking to their engineers and they said our experience with our EV so far has taught us that we can use a smaller buffer and it's not hurting the battery. So the iX, for instance, has 111 kilowatt hour battery, and I think 106 is usable.
Well, that's
so
pretty good.
That's pretty tight. You know, that's, you know, 5 kilowatt hours on 111 kilowatt hour battery. That's much smaller percentage than what BMW did in their previous EVs. And, you know, I talked to them at length about that, and, you know, and they were confident that, no, we'll be fine with this. This is big enough for long battery life. We're still going to warranty it against capacity and everything. So they're going to put the warranty behind it.
Right.
Hey guys, speaking of that, we have a whole bunch of EVs coming this year, obviously, this year to our summit thing. Sorry for some of the V8 Dodge pickup trucks driving by. Hemi. However,
it's okay. Now we hear you pretty well. Coming.
Here's the deal. We have all these cars. I only have a few days with all of them, but I want to do some testing. The first is we have the new EQS here. So I want to do a charging test. I don't think I have time to do any range testing, but that's going to be interesting. We have the RS e-tron GT, which I've only sampled in Italy for a short period of time. That video never went up. We have e-tron Sportback. We have XC40 Recharge. We have Polestar 2. We have Model S Plaid. We have Model Y, Model 3. We have, trying to think what else we have. Yeah, two Mach-E GTs coming this weekend. We have a whole bunch of
sweet
stuff. ID4s. So the big question is, with all of these cars in limited time, if people want to reach out, if there's any specific testing that we can do, or maybe we can arrange for some of our guests to do, let us know, because we have we'll have a fleet of cars here, about 21 or 22 cars, I think, in total.
Nice. Are they all right in the parking lot there, or are they at the top? You have a charging station right there on the roof or something?
Yeah, so logistically, you know, this is the center for the hotel. The parking garage is down there. I only put my media vehicle down there that I'm driving this week. I actually didn't take anything electric this week because I didn't want to take any driving opportunities away from our guests. And then our parking garage is on the other side, about one block past that building. So everything will be put in the main parking garage. And then, you know, we can just walk back and forth. And thankfully we walk right by a Starbucks. So I'll be sane. It'll be great.
Right. All right. So are we ready to talk about some news? Okay. Let's do that. First,
we have a midweek sponsor this week.
Well, we have a regular sponsor that we should hear from. So here we go.
This week's Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by Electrify America. And we're so happy to be partnering with Electrify America until the end of the year. With Electrify America, you can drive your EV from coast to coast with more than 650 charging stations nationwide and new locations opening every week. Electrify America is bringing EV drivers the freedom they need. Whether you want to plan a weekend getaway, maybe you're off to see some friends or relatives, maybe it's a coast-to-coast road trip. You can ask our Kyle about how that's done using Electrify America charging stations. Well, you can rely on Electrify America's ultra-fast chargers to get you back on the road faster. So, where will you go charging on Electrify America? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear what your plans are for this weekend, and tell us where you'll go next. And you can learn more at electrifyamerica.com.
All right. So we've seen in the past a lot of the automakers have laid out their like long-term plans for electrification for the future. And so this week, Nissan had its shot at that kind of a scene.
Oh, are we talking about this thing?
Yeah, we have to. It's like our title story.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. I won't be disappointed. I'm sorry.
No, you can be. Feel free to be disappointed.
Okay. I'm starting off disappointed.
Okay. Right. And I can understand that. We'll get into it. So Nissan unveiled its long-term vision to empower mobility and beyond. The program is called Ambition 2030. Of course, electrification is at the core of the strategy, and they plan on introducing 23 electrified vehicles by 2030, 15 of which will be electric, all electric. So it seems 20 of those will arrive in the next 5 years. That's a pretty short time frame. And they're investing the equivalent of about $17.7 billion in the program. We already know about the Ariya, of course, but Nissan also took this opportunity to introduce us to four new concepts, one of which, the Chill Out concept, will serve, I guess, as a replacement for the Nissan Leaf.
Sometimes so. Tom needs to drive the chill out concept. You know what I mean? Tom's got that New Jersey energy coming in all the time.
You're saying he needs to chill out?
Yeah, sometimes Tom needs to chill out. Sometimes I need to be more like Tom. We balance each other out.
All right. So there it is on the screen. So look, we can look at that. So it's not a crossover. It's a crossover. It's not a hatch like the Leaf. And like the Area, the styling is pretty simple. There's not a whole lot in the way of character lines. Instead, it seems to like rely a lot on... it's leaning heavily on light signatures to kind of give it character. So, yeah, there's the back, overhead. I like some of the blue outline in the interior. But, you know, the interior is pretty simple. It has a steering wheel that folds away for autonomous driving, as so many concepts have today. We will imagine this will be smaller and more affordable than the Aria eventually when it comes out. This is the most important of the concepts shown, I believe, and the only one they had a physical, you know, a physical version of that they could, you know, stand by and things.
So it looks like someone described the front end of a Cadillac Lyric over the phone, and then Nissan created it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's got this multiple light thing going down the front.
Right. I wish I could pull up a Lyric real quick to demonstrate, but
it's, you have to use a mental. Creativity here,
right?
It's a stretch. Tom, right. What do you think about, so actually, and I hate to go into the story negative, this isn't what I thought you were going to talk about. I thought you were going to talk about the silly race car thing that they have.
How it morphed into the single seat race car
that... Yeah, because we'll all be driving those everywhere. So Tom, what do you think about Nissan's electrification strategy in general, just over the history? Because my impression, they were right up first, the first mass production electric car, the Leaf's great. I still see them on the road all over the place in multiple markets as a global electric vehicle. I just drove the new one yesterday after it blocked our hotel parking lot. And I was like, you know what? I just had one the other week too. Like, it's a great car. It really is comfortable. It's built really well. They're solid. So what is your impression of Nissan now saying we're going electric? Didn't they say this 10 years ago?
Yeah, they did. And, you know, we know that they had some kind of internal reset, and that happened, you know, quite a few years back. A lot of the early adopters, Kyle, look at BMW. They were out there early also. And then the company pulled back and did a reset and said, OK, we're going to kick the can down the road a little bit. But luckily, they only did it for like one life cycle of a vehicle. They pushed it back 4 to 5 years. It looks like Nissan's pushing it back 2 to 3 life cycles from the initial Leaf, you know, before they really go all in and electrify. I mean, it's good to hear, but, you know, we hear this from everybody. Oh, yeah, by 2030, we're going to have X, Y, and Z.
Right.
You know, what do we got now? What are we going to have in the next 2 or 3 years? That's, for the most part, what I'm really interested in, because everybody will tell you we're going to be electric by X, Y, and Z. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to follow through on those plans. When you push something out that far, you know, it's kind of like, okay, you know, are you really serious about this? It's good to hear that by 2026 they're gonna have, what was the numbers, Dom?
15.
Yeah, so I mean, that's pretty aggressive. So they must have been working on those vehicles. They can't just be on paper at this point if they're gonna have that many vehicles.
Well, I don't know, Hummer EV was 2 years penned to production, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was quick. It was quick for GM.
It's like, yeah, that was pretty quick. But we're talking about a number of vehicles. You could maybe streamline one or two vehicles that quickly.
That's a good point.
Can you do 8? You know, so.
Well, could they even do this? I mean, will we look back in 2030 or 2026 and say, wow, we got 3 out of those 15, or we got 17 out of those 15?
Yeah,
all of these they're just hollow claims that any automaker can just walk back on. It's a page 1 story at launch and a page 11 story when they redact it. And, you know, they're just going for the hype train right now. Everyone wants to be the new Tesla.
Yeah. No, right. I agree. And, you know, at some point we have to hold these guys to the fire when they, you know, push things back that far. You know, I was very critical of BMW for quite a number of years on, you know, a lot of articles I've written and so forth that, you know, I was very disappointed that they decided to pull back on their electrification. But it seems like they've kind of righted the ship. I like where they're going with the i4 and iX. Had the opportunity to drive both of those. Reviews are up on Inside EVs. I think they're two really good electric vehicles. And I can't wait for Kyle to get behind the wheel one and really get the i4 M50 out on the track, Kyle. I think you're going to be impressed.
Yeah, but I'm so excited. Did you see? So I reviewed the combustion brother of that car.
Exactly.
And everyone's like, when is the i4 coming? I'm like, I've never been asked to review the i4 or iX before in mass numbers until this car came out. I think there's a BMW crowd of people that are just so excited about the i4, especially because it's a little bit more attainable than iX, a little sportier, fits truer to the BMW heritage. I'm excited for that car.
Absolutely. It's a funny thing. So I'm at the airport. Getting ready to fly to Dubai, and we met some friends there that happened to be going to Dubai also, believe it or not. And as we're talking to them, we're talking about somehow we got on the subject of cars and so forth. Their son has an order in for an i4 M50. Uh-huh. And when they found out that I had driven it, reviewed it, I showed them the review. They sent the link to their son immediately. Like, he's like, give me your phone number. I have to talk to him. You know, I've been waiting for this car forever. So there are people out there, enthusiasts, Kyle, that know about it and that have them ordered. So that's good to hear. And another good thing is I've been chatting with BMW, and we might be able to get some early access to do range and charging tests on both of those vehicles. Maybe even before the new year. So let's see.
That's a secret. Don't tell anybody.
Yeah. Now everyone knows. Well, good thing no one watched the show, because now hopefully everyone who's watching, don't tell anyone.
So I feel like I need to backtrack just a little bit and just to get us back to the chill out concept for a second. And I just want to say that's so what I understand, that's coming sooner than later. But it's not on the CMF EV platform, I understand. It's like on some new skateboard that they're calling the Nissan EV Technology Vision. And that is said to go under all those concepts when they get to production, though the Leader 3 are supposedly only going to be powered by solid-state batteries, which they're building I believe they said in 2024 they're building a pilot line for the solid-state batteries they have. And they will have in full production by 2028, they say, and they'll charge three times faster, and it'll be only $75 per kilowatt hour by 2028, with more cost reductions to go in, which it's a good number, but I mean, as far as the price goes, but I don't think it's going to be the lowest in the industry, but you know, it looks in the ballpark basically.
And well, if you're making up numbers and you're making up concepts, why not just say it goes a million miles,
right,
and it costs $40,000? I don't know.
Right. I mean, I had the other three concepts on the screen there for a second, and you know, I'm looking at them and they're not really doing anything for me. You know, it's okay. You got a sports car, you got a pickup truck, and
if the concepts aren't doing anything for you, imagine real life. I think Nissan is coming into their sweet spot given the circumstances over the next 1 to 2 years. They have their real enthusiasts getting ramped up about the new Z, including myself. I cannot wait for that car. You guys know I'm a huge car lover, but also the Aria, which has a huge fan base. I mean, I was at the LA Auto Show when they announced the pricing for Aria, and I was around it, and I got to meet potential customers, and we went for one, you know, public day just to see what people are thinking about all the cars. And I have to tell you, there's huge interest in Aria. So I think the real story here is not any of this mumbo jumbo. It's the next 1 year of Nissan really establishing themselves back as a stronghold in the automotive sphere, because the last few years, honestly, they've just been making absolute garbage.
Right.
The company's been hanging on by a thread. The cars are falling apart. They're not pretty. They don't drive well. But then they've been revamping their entire combustion lineup over the last 2 years. They've all gotten really good. I haven't driven one I hadn't liked, honestly. And that's crazy because I've never liked Nissan before. And then, and I hate to say I don't like a whole brand, but they didn't have anything that appealed to me. Now it's like everything's like, great, need a small truck, Frontier, need a sports car, perhaps wait for the new Z because the Supra doesn't have a manual, but the new Z has 400 horsepower and a manual. The Aria, great interior, really interesting car. For me, I don't see its market relevance, but there's a lot of Leaf owners who want that same experience in their SUV. I think that's the real story of Nissan, just establishing back.
Right. So these, I've been thumbing through these. If you're watching us on, if you listen to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, I've been scrolling through these different concepts, the three different concepts that have. So it's like a pickup truck, a sports car, and like a small four-door hatchback. It's kind of not adventurous, but the interior space is maximized, and it's, you know, I don't know. It's got some nice styling things going on, kind of, but there's nothing to really, like, the back looks decent. You can see that. I like the way that the roof looks, maybe a tent on the roof. It just kind of dips down. With the
no one makes a there. Tent that slim. So it's just right. a concept.
Sure. Right. It's just a concept. That's true. But yeah.
And concept tents are that thin, Kyle.
Yeah, they're making concept tents, concept tires. They forgot to center the Nissan badge in the back. Like, what are they doing over there? I imagine the doors and glass are about that thin in the concept versions because they don't have to pass crash.
Well, not even because I don't think there's an actual physical.
No, yeah, you're right. It's just a rendering. I'm just saying they're probably modeling it off of nothing. So you guys know how I feel about concepts. I hate to always put a downer on them, but let's talk about what's going on today.
Right.
Leonard brought up a good point. He said those rims look like the optional wheels on the Mini Cooper SE. And he's right. They look like European plugs, which, you know, a funny story about that Kyle was actually involved with me with when the Mini Cooper SE first came out. It was in like March or April of 2020. It was right when COVID began. And they just brought them out. I got one of the first ones as a test loaner car for the week. And I drove it down to Kyle's track in North Carolina. He actually drove up, met me halfway so we could drive together the rest of the way down there. And they announced that the names of the wheels were the Corona wheel options. And
I did a short video about the virus.
Yeah, I did a short video and posted it on Twitter. Like, you know, could you believe these things are called the Corona wheels and the coronavirus just came out?
Right.
And like half an hour later, I got a call from Mini. And Mini's like, Tom, we saw your Twitter. We've just made like a meeting. Mini is retracting that name and they renamed the wheels. They're like, you can tell your followers they are no longer called the Corona wheels. And this was going on while I was driving down from New Jersey to North Carolina with Kyle. I'm getting these messages. They're like, please announce that they're not called the Corona wheels anymore. So it was pretty funny.
Right on. Hey, so while we're speaking about Nissan real quick, I did, and Kyle alluded to this a little earlier, but we should mention that a couple of days after they unveiled its Ambition 2030, it introduced a high-performance exploration, development, and demonstration project, putting the Aria's powertrain in a single-seater racing chassis. It's the Nissan Aria single-seater concept. It's called that for obvious reasons. It demonstrates, they say, a new and efficient EV performance language and will act as a testbed for future motorsports endeavors. Not much to say about this yet, since it appears to be all computer-generated graphics, but it's nice to see that they're at least thinking about it. They are one of the original Formula E teams, and they will be participating in this upcoming season, which is more than we can say for some of the other automakers who were dabbling in that championship. But yeah, let's talk about something else.
Well, I was just talking to the CEO or chair of Mercedes about this, of Daimler, and... Okay. You know, I asked him why are you pulling out of Formula E? And he said, well, Formula One will go electric one day anyway. So that's where we're going to put our investment.
Right. Right. That's it's going to be interesting to see how that winds up. You know, can Formula E sort of keep evolving to, you know, have a separate, I mean, because it's very different kind of racing from Formula One. You know, they've had a lot of gimmicks because they had to swap out cars because the batteries are too small. And then they have, like, you know, special speed zones now that you can drive through to get boosts and the audience can participate. You know, this is, like, so different from what Formula One does, right?
Yeah, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think everyone was like, Mercedes is pulling out of electrification stuff. But
right.
I'm not going to attempt to pronounce Ola's last name, but Ola runs Mercedes globally. He's an awesome dude and huge racing fan, by the way. And so I was like, all right, you know, what's the future like? And it's all about, you know, their F1 technology of investing in these mild hybrid systems, then these boost systems, mostly developed by Mercedes, by the way, has now made it into the production AMGs that are launching this year. Those systems will go plug-in hybrid, and then they'll go full battery electric within just a few years. So all of that, I'm not saying Formula One will be full battery electric in a few years, but they're getting more research. They have more funding. There's more fan base for more innovation to come out of Formula One in electric than Formula E is as an entire series being battery electric. So interesting that, you know, still the biggest racing series has you know, the most amount of innovation, making it the cars we can drive.
Right. And it's a huge series. They've got like tons and tons and tons of money and the hugest, it's the largest, the biggest sport in the world, right?
Yeah. And it's almost an unlimited budget. And, right. you know, I just thought it was interesting that he's like, look, we were investing in Formula E stuff. And honestly, we're losing innovation money. We can do more with Formula One and we get more direct translation to the electrification side of cars. I thought that was really, really interesting to learn about.
Right. That's with I know of another automaker, a little smaller one, who, you know, Formula E wanted them to participate in the series, but they were like, they just didn't have the room to innovate, to, you know, to really kind of push to kind of get gain an advantage, to kind of push themselves and to benefit the company interior as well. So
I think they need a few more seasons of more fan base and more freedom from the manufacturers and less of the silly boost rules. And these 45-minute races are pretty short. You know, I've attended them. And look, at the end of the day, I like electric racing. It's great. But I think we need to factor in more charging. If this is really going to be what we do, we have to, you know, factor in all aspects of the car world for it to trickle down. I think, and I know it's just me, I think you start all the cars dead. 0% state of charge starting. Then you factor in charging and range, and do you go slow and skip a charging stop, or do you go fast and charge quickly? I think that'd be really fun.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I mean, I don't think anyone else.
I don't think anyone wants to watch a bunch of cars in the grid charging for 15 minutes.
Oh, it would have to charge faster than that. We're talking a couple minute fill-ups and go, and then you know you have to come up with a good strategy.
Right. I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I would start with a full tank, full battery, and then maybe, quick charging.
But charging is becoming part of Formula E this coming season, by the way.
Right.
Yeah, and ABV.
We don't know the levels of charging, do we?
Fast.
Like 350 is fast?
Oh,
or
yeah. No,
one
not,
megawatt
not exact
fast.
Number. No, not sure. But okay. I know it's going to be ABB has been working on special technology to develop to charge these cars in a racing environment. It has to be a mobile solution because a lot of tracks are city tracks that just don't have the power to just plug into. So it's a really cool thing. And as soon as they're ready to talk about it, I've already asked ABB if Tom and I can go and do a whole thing on their charging situation. And they said, yeah, as soon as we're ready.
Okay. Like I know nothing about it, but I can envision like a big hydrogen fuel cell thing, you know, doing the energy. Because in the past, we've seen a lot of diesel electricity generators, and that's not very kosher. But
interesting. Yeah, the place in Fort Collins where we are likely going to move into has a whole lab. Like, I mean, lab like the size of this, you know, first bit of the hotel. It's a huge building devoted to hydrogen conversion of diesel and gas turbines, basically. So it's huge, you know, stories tall diesel engines that are being converted to run on hydrogen. They have an electrolyzer, they have a fueling station ready to go in. I think we'll be like the second hydrogen fueling station. And I'm not like a big hydrogen guy for personal use, but for, you know, large applications, it makes a lot of sense.
Right. I mean, this could be better than like burning diesel, you know, in a city environment and, you know, to power electric cars. At least, I can see it's a role for hydrogen in that situation. But so it'll be interesting to see if they can, what levels they get up to, because that'd be great to see. I really want to see a megawatt just because it's, you know, a nice big round number. And
hey, Tom, you've been involved with BMW for a long time. Did you ever get to drive one of their hydrogen concept cars?
Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't drive it. I drove in it.
Oh, the 7 Series?
No, the new X5.
Oh, you went hydrogen. In the new one, really?
Yeah. And so the crazy thing is I actually have a ton of footage that I need to finish editing and put that video up. I'm going to do that soon. That's on my chalkboard, top of my list. So I did a nice long drive in it. I didn't drive it myself. And I was totally impressed. Now, I've said this many times. I don't believe that personal transportation, hydrogen, is going to be an answer. I think it'll work for long-haul trucking. I think it's going to work for aviation. There's going to be use case for it in my opinion, but for personal vehicles, I don't see that being the answer. That said, this thing drove great. One of the things I always complained about hydrogen cars, and I've driven like the Hyundai Nexo and Honda, and they're always were just dogs. You know, you just step on it and it goes nowhere. And, the BMW X5 felt like a BEV, know, that instant torque. You stepped on it and it took off, you know, and it didn't feel at all like the driving experience that I had experienced with the hydrogen vehicles that I had driven. So in that regard, hey, look, if they can offer a great driving experience, that's getting it halfway there. I still think it's impossible to build out a hydrogen refueling network. I don't think that's ever going to happen, quite honestly. And that's why I think it'll work for long haul trucking and for aviation, because you can strategically place the refueling stations. They don't have to be everywhere where they would have to be for personal transportation. They could be along routes, aviation, you put one in an airport, you know, you know where the plane's going to take off and land. There's no deviation from that course. So it works for that. But yeah, I actually have a video I'm going to be publishing soon, Kyle, on the X5 hydrogen.
Huh, interesting. I got to drive the Mirai a couple weeks ago in California. That was...
Yeah, the new LS chassis one, the big one.
The Mirai, yeah. Yeah, it's plenty of power. It was great. I mean, as far as
it
like,
looks
just
so
like,
luxurious. I've never been in one.
It's like it was a weird mix. It's got like the sportiness, you know, when you kick it down. It's not sporty handling at all.
No, but the ride's super soft.
Yeah,
isn't
it's a pretty soft ride. It was kind of premium. It kind of, yeah, there's some corners cut here and there. I felt like a bit on the, you know, I don't know.
Well, we all know you're a Taycan man. Nothing will be. Like that.
I can't wait to get in one this weekend. That's awesome.
Yep. And our friend Calvin will be here too to display the cars and everything like that.
Right. Yeah, I'd like to meet him. I've never met him.
What's he bringing, Kyle?
I don't want to promise anything because he hasn't promised me anything.
Okay.
But I've asked for the new GTS Sport Turismo to be on display.
Ooh.
And I didn't get a no. So we'll see.
Oh, cool.
That'd be great. I'd love to see that.
I mean, that would be surprising because it's still the embargo for that isn't lifted until the 14th, I think.
Well, there'll be one at the Autopia 2099 show tomorrow. So they're okay displaying it.
Right.
We just displaying it is one thing. Yeah. I guess you're right.
Because
some of the cars at your event are just going to be displayed. That's right. I was thinking they were all going to be driven.
No, not every one of them will be driven, but, you know, especially not a GTS Sport Turismo if it's there because it's, you know, well ahead of when people can drive it.
Which is, of course, the best Porsche Taycan, right?
Well, we imagine. We haven't driven it. I don't know. What if it turns out to be really bad? But
I don't think
it will.
I really don't think it will. I mean, it's going to be as good as a regular Taycan GTS, except it looks better, right?
Yeah, I know. Tom, you've driven it.
I wish I could take a bite. So
I have an Audi RS6 Avant this week, which is like the big combustion turbocharged 600 horsepower station wagon, which I love because it's a fast wagon. But it's between that and the Taycan GTS Sport Turismo. Spec for spec, it's $30,000 cheaper to get the Audi. And but I still think the Porsche is the way to go for me.
Right. I mean, that Audi RS6, I mean, that's always been a pretty fast car too.
Oh, it's insane. I've only drove it from the airport up to here. And then we went out to the desert in one of our cars because I don't like to pile miles on media cars.
Right.
Unless it's a Porsche. So sorry, Calvin. I'm just joking.
Wait. Stop for one second.
Yeah, I don't.
Kyle doesn't like to pile miles on media loads.
That's true.
BS. I'm calling you out on that. Nobody puts more miles on media load cars. Kyle drives them from Florida to California, from Colorado to North Carolina. No other member of the media
Let me be clear.
Kyle just totally lied to the entire Inside EVs podcast crew. Period. Case closed. And we can show them the videos to prove.
Yeah, no, I know they're up there. Here's the thing:
digging yourself a bigger hole.
No, those are pre-negotiated, you know, stories where I've said, "Hey, I want to drive your car and do a story breaking the Cannonball record or doing something like this." Although we could never say that to Porsche, we just had to say we need to go to New York to LA really fast. So those situations, sure, but like the cars that we get on week loans and stuff, I never put more than 500 miles on them across the company. We always go 499.9. And then send them back.
All right.
Hey, so let's talk about another.
On that one,
let's talk about another news story. Our chat has been a fire with discussing the advantages or disadvantages of hydrogen and or battery swapping and fast charging for racing, which is kind of cool. Anyway, but moving on to this news of the week, this is great. Okay, add this to stream. Oh, yes. Look at that. So last week, we got a preview of the Polestar 5, which is coming in 2024. This week, Polestar has released a shot of its next vehicle, the Polestar 3, which will be built in the U.S. at Volvo's plant in Charleston, South Carolina. So despite it being covered in camo, I think we can get a pretty good idea of what to expect. It has similar proportions to the Polestar 2, but it's more distinctly a crossover SUV. I think the Polestar 2 kind of, walks the line between SUV and sedan, sort of. So we don't have a lot of details on this yet, really, but Polestar does say that it will offer advanced driver assistance features, including autonomous highway piloting powered by the best-in-class LiDAR sensor from Luminar and centralized NVIDIA computing power. So, Kyle, no powertrain details yet, but do you think they'll use the same components as Polestar 2, or is that enough, or would that be too underpowered?
No, I really hope they update the car to their new modular platform for battery electric. Right now, all of the cars, well, Polestar 2, all of the cars, are built on CMA, compact modular architecture, which is a chassis and a whole platform designed to handle, petrol, diesel, mild hybrid, series, just regular hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and battery electric. And that's just too much to do. It shows in their efficiency numbers. Polestar 2 is an amazing car, but amazingly inefficient in our testing. Right. And it's smaller. Like, we literally drove a whole bunch of EV SUVs side by side. Not the most scientific test, not the most scientific recording stuff, using just the in-car, recorders. But it was significantly less efficient than ID4, Mach-E, and especially Model Y.
Right.
And, that to me is just a little bit disappointing. So while I love XC40 Recharge, I haven't really spent much time with it. We have one coming to this event, so we'll be able to drive it and do some stuff. I spent quite a bit of time with the new C40 Recharge. I've driven the Polestar 2, only the all-wheel drive variants. I haven't driven any of the front-wheel drive ones yet. However, it just seems to me like if they are using the old architecture, that's a real disappointment. So I really hope it's on the new platform.
I wonder if they even told. I didn't see anything about platforms in there that I recall. This is like at 1 o'clock in the morning. I was looking over this because.
But it goes without saying, I'm a big Polestar fan, right? Just from it's one of the only cars where design and feel and touch points of the interior really matter to me, because it's so, Volvo, and I'm a Volvo guy, so I love Polestar, right? Of course. And Polestar 2, if I didn't have big dogs and, need to transport a lot of stuff around, that's probably what I would drive as a personal daily driver, in this sort of mid-priced CUV, kind of premium but not luxury level.
So I believe this is going to be on the scalable product architecture, the SPA 2 platform. Does that ring a bell?
Well, SPA 2 is supposed to handle combustion as well, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. So they're building it in South Carolina, and at the same place, they're going to have the successor to the XC90 SUV, which they haven't given us the electric name for.
Right.
And I believe that's going to be
only
electric.
Beautiful, right? Facility, by the way. That facility is just outside of Charleston, I want to say.
Right.
Absolutely gorgeous. They build S60 there, and I think V60, but I think only the 60 series cars. I don't know if they build any other US ones, but it has so much room for expansion. It's a beautiful campus. I've been by there. It's awesome.
Right.
So Christian Richard asked, is the Polestar 3 is supposed to be XC90 size, correct? I thought it was going to be smaller than that.
It looks pretty large, and they're going to have the Polestar 4 is coming out after this. And it's a sporty, a smaller sporty SUV. So it's going to be, I guess, similar to this, but smaller. So this is relatively large, but I don't know if it's XC90 large.
This
XC90
are probably the same, because XC90 is not big.
Oh, really?
Yeah, XC90 is.
That's your biggest one, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's not that big. Like, you get inside and you're like, oh, wow. Like, you actually, like, we put our dogs in one. We had one for a week, and I'm like, okay, we kind of need like a bigger car than this.
What? Oh, really? Well,
yeah, it's not huge.
Right. It's not like a.
It's not a Tahoe.
Right. Exactly. No. I think Aviator, maybe.
I don't know. I just really hope we get an electric Suburban, because that I could use. We just have so much stuff we're needing to move these days.
Right. Yeah. Well, electric Suburban, that's on the drawing board at GM. They have one of those.
Good.
Yeah.
Suburban is the longest running nameplate in automotive history. It's an American icon. And if GM's serious, they should electrify it.
Right. And I believe they will be. It would be on the same platform as the Hummer EV.
Yeah, and I want a megawatt hour battery pack in that thing. I want to go at least 250 miles on a charge.
Well, I mean, what's the Hummer do? 159?
Yeah, I was just joking. That's 200 kilowatt hours and does 329 miles.
All right, 329. So I think a Suburban, if it was like a little lighter and you could do more with the streamlining, with more aerodynamics and with that, I think they could get 300 miles or closer to four, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's the American icon right there. I can't, once that goes electric in my mind, that's when, you know, that F-150, we already have Mustang, but Suburban's almost as important as Mustang and F-150. Once those go, then I think we're all in.
Right. So I really did like this Polestar 3 though. I think that's going to be, and that's like next year, that's really soon, right? So
yeah, I spoke to some of the engineers on this project and they were talking, we could talk subsystems, but not full platform.
Right.
But it sounds like it's going to be much better optimized for battery electric. So I don't want to go into this saying it's going to be inefficient. It's very possible that it will be an efficient car.
Right. And it looks great. It's got, looks like it still has like the Thor's hammer headlights going on and a good chunky proportions. Yeah, looks good. So I am stopping that. And okay. So we recently saw the debut of the Solterra Subaru and the Toyota bZ4X. Now, Toyota's luxury brand is teasing a crossover built on the ETNGA platform, like those other two. But unlike those...
Who named all this stuff?
What's that?
Who named all this stuff?
Yeah.
bZ4X is Beyond Zero 4X, right?
Right.
Yeah, but that's a terrible name.
Right,
and what's the four platform architecture?
And the four is about the size of it. Is you know, it's like a mid-size. This is
a RAV4.
Right. It's not. Well, I was thinking four-wheel drive. I think the four. I thought the four was in there.
But you could get a front-wheel drive one.
Right. So it wasn't that. It's but the size. You know, it's demarks the size basically. Damn. So
we need some better naming stuff going on.
Right.
Nissan's got it with the chill out. That is so cool.
Let me see, share this thing. So, yeah, I can't wait till Martin comes back again next week. We miss him.
Dominic's got his hands full. It's harder than it looks, guys, because he's organizing what pictures to put up, what videos and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Really quick, DB asked me, Tom, when are you getting a production Hummer for range and charging tests? We don't know yet. Hopefully Kyle and I will get access to one of those, but I know I don't have it on my drawing board because there hasn't been communication yet. Maybe Kyle has, but I don't, that's not even on my future planning yet. I hope to get one as soon as I can, but GM hasn't really communicated with us.
I spoke to our friends at GMC just this past week because I was reviewing one of their diesel trucks and, you know, just reminded them how much we need to get behind the wheel to do our testing of that truck.
Yes. So getting back to the RZ, if I may. Wait,
have you named it yet? You haven't said the RZ yet.
Oh, did it? I didn't. Okay. Yeah. RZ, and they have, Toyota has applied for copyright and been granted copyright for the name RZ450E. So I think that could very well be what this ends up being called, which is, you know, a great name, of course. So I ran the images they sent us through Photoshop, and I got this one here with a bit more details in it. You can see the wheels and everything. And so this is kind of interesting. So we've seen the Solterra, the Subaru Solterra and the bZ4X, and those are all on this ETNGA platform, as is this. But this is totally different body panels and stuff on the outside. It's not like a, you know, badge engineered for Lexus. So I don't know. This could be a very different kind of car, interior, exterior, everything, than the bZ4X, and I don't know. So,
wait, I have an opinion.
So can we excuse the bZ4X, Kyle, for its shortcomings if the price is good? But
yes, but this doesn't have the stupid plastic everywhere. This looks good.
Right. I mean, well, on the Toyota, that stuff that around the wheel was, it looks like it wasn't cladding, like plastic cladding. It's only plastic
it's
cladding.
Painted.
On the, yeah, it's painted.
But it still looks terrible. So this looks way better, and it's going to be just like a normal Lexus in that regard. I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, some sharp creases there on that character line on that front fender coming back to the...
Yeah, I think this is going to be a hugely popular vehicle, and it's a vehicle that's not going to necessarily rely on specs to sell the numbers. It's going to be the brand name, the quality of Toyota that I think is going to surprise a lot of people. I'm not saying I think it's a good or bad car. I don't know. I haven't tested it. I haven't been in it. Dominic, you've spent more time with any of us there. I've only, you know, been around them for a couple seconds, the Subaru and the BZ4X.
Right.
But at the end of the day, when Toyota does something, I know everyone hates them because they do this whole "we choose not to plug in" campaign and they're against EVs. But I think they're going to be pretty popular, and I think they'll be hard to get.
Interesting. So I'm wondering if they're going to put the same powertrain in it as the BZ4X and the Solterra, which is...
Yeah, they do that for their combustion cars. It'll be no different.
But it's sort of underwhelming. I feel like they could put like a 150 kilowatt hour or 150 kilowatt motor on the front of this that they have on the front wheel drive version, and then put another like 80 kilowatts in the back. So it'll be, instead of 215 horsepower, it'll be closer to 300 horsepower, which would be
adequate. It's possible, but wouldn't you think, you know, we had this conversation about the battery pack size being the same, but the all-wheel drive only having 10 more kilowatts of power. We think maybe it's a limitation of the battery systems, perhaps. So at the end of the day, most Lexus vehicles are just Toyotas with Toyota drivetrains,
but
they usually do have a one-up engine option. So you could be totally, you know, justified in thinking that this might have a better powertrain than the Solterra, than the BZ4X to differentiate it a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if they do that. Toyota, though, is a much more popular global brand than Lexus is. And Lexus is global, but Toyota really has the prestige around the world of being just the volume seller. And so I would be surprised if they reserve their electric car just to be Lexus-fied, because we view Lexus much more than other markets do here in the U.S.
Right. I think it needs more credentials. It needs more range. It needs more power than what the BZ4X has to be. I don't know.
Do you know what the range is on BZ4X? I never actually researched it.
I'm thinking 230 off the top of my
head. So low to mid 200s.
EPA. Yeah, but not. Yeah,
it wasn't overwhelming.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, look, if they go and they make the Lexus, you know, legit, and they say we're putting the big battery, the big motors in this thing, well, that's just going to be the car.
Right. Right.
They'll be everywhere.
I think they have to do something like that, Kyle. I really do. I don't think they could sell it if it has just the pedestrian numbers performance-wise and range-wise as the BZ4X. I mean, it's the Lexus is their premium brand. You know, the BZ4X numbers weren't impressive. They'd be that much less impressive with a Lexus badge on it, in my opinion.
Right.
We'll see.
So let's look at something else a little bit more exciting then, possibly. So this might be the competition to the Lexus, right? This is the Audi Q6 e-tron. We just got a picture of it here, and it's still under camo, as you can see. And this will be like the equivalent to the Porsche Macan, right? So
yes, this one's built on PPE, I guess. Yep, right. It says EPPE there. Look at the little ID3 in the back on the snow. Hell yeah, that's awesome. See, this is so cool. I'm excited for Volkswagen Group to get all these models out. And I think the same trend is going to apply here that we've seen across their other models. With the exclusion of the J1 platform, which is RS e-tron GT, e-tron GT, and Taycan variants, I think Volkswagen's going for just enough numbers where there's nothing to complain about, but also nothing super exciting. And at the end of the day, they'll have good enough range, good enough charging. Volkswagen's really serious on charging curves. And I think it's just going to be a great car that will just be like a pumped up Q4 e-tron, just with newer tech.
So is this like out of the, say, the Lexus league, basically, as far as performance-wise, I expect it will be?
Yeah, and size. And I think price? This is bigger than what the Lexus thing will be if it's BZ4X. Yeah, all around, this is going to be an elevated experience, I think.
You see Lexus as more as like an affordable premium kind of thing?
Yeah, I wouldn't even put the word premium on most of them that I drive.
Okay, so maybe like
I really don't like them, generally.
Really?
There are some great ones. There's like LC500, which is an amazing car.
Right.
There's trying to think what else could they make. The LS is good, but then you drive an S-Class and you're like, oh, that's what a luxury car should feel like. So like, it's great if you're coming from Toyota and you're, you know, going up to a Lexus. But if you're going from a BMW into a Lexus, you're like, oh, okay, we forgot about driving today, folks.
What you're saying, the dynamics are not quite as...
I'm just saying they usually don't have much power. And that's usually a disappointment. Every time I get into a Lexus, they're underpowered. They're reliable. They're strong. They're not pretentious. So people buy them for the image, for the reliability. Very sensible people buy them. My grandmother owned a Lexus for like 20 years. And the only sensible person to not buy a Lexus is Timon, who works for me, because he just bought a 2004 GX and he's making it into a monster truck.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, which will be kind of funny.
Okay. Okay. So let's move along. Something else. There's only a few other things. We might end this show a little earlier than it's already 20 after.
Yeah, though. We're an hour 20 minutes into this thing. But,
okay, so let's at least look at this thing though. If I can get up on the screen, because this is like just kind of mad. I don't know if you've seen this. Let's see. Bring up on the screen. Have you seen this? Like what? It's a safari-like Project Maybach EV study. And it questions the status quo. So that's all I really have on it. It's like an official Maybach concept study.
I love everything about this concept, but it's just a concept. This is hilarious. Maybach went and made like an offer. This is legit?
I guess it's a real physical thing. Yeah, look, solar panels on the front hood. The front hood's so huge. You know, I mean, everything about this is like just wild.
Yeah, well,
the proportions.
Mercedes and Maybach have always done crazy concepts, and we never see them make it to production. But
right,
that front end is more Rolls Royce than it is Maybach.
If I lived in Dubai and I had billions of dollars,
this is what you'd be rolling in. Absolutely, you'll see them out there.
Special order. I want this. Take out the back 40. Yeah,
I would want mine a bit higher though, because it's so long. Your breakover angle is not going to be great, so. We need some lift.
Right. Well, the front, I mean, it doesn't look so bad, the breakover. The front's good. The back.
It just looks long if you're, you know.
Right. Well, yeah.
Frail.
It's true. You need a little shorter wheelbase.
Yeah. But you got to have the long wheelbase.
Right.
But so if I leave, it's just because my battery died in my computer. I'm sorry. Just letting you know.
Okay. Well, maybe we should call it a day then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone's asleep already.
That might have a bigger frunk than the F-150 Lightning if that ever came to production.
Actually, though, I
or feel maybe like optional hot tub. Like, remember the limos that used to have a hot tub
on
them?
You nailed it. If you're making a concept, you need a hot tub in it.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. Speaking of,
why has no one done that yet for an electric car?
I want to
show this. This is cool.
So the Porsche Taycan Cross Turismo. As a fashionable camper, I don't have all the details on this. Look at this Discovery Berry bundles. I don't know.
I just don't understand why it's $250,000. Just buy a Cross Turismo and put a $30,000 rooftop on it, and you're good to go. It's not like they're even using a spicy one. It's got the base aero wheels.
Right. It looks pretty cool, though, right?
Oh, amazing.
I think I put on Twitter, I could live in this down by the river. Oh, only like two pictures. Oh, okay.
See, that's a good-looking Cross Turismo right there.
Yeah. I believe you drove that, didn't you?
The
green one?
The Mamba one? No, I did not drive that exact spec.
Sound like
someone's starting up their motorcycle over here.
That sounds like a Harley.
That's our cue to get out of here.
All right. So that brings us to the end of our show. Thanks for watching us today. I really appreciate you bearing with us through all of this. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. That'll help us out a lot if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can find Tom at Tomalog, that's with two M's. Martin Lee is at, even when he's not with us, he's at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Please subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao. All right.